Hi, this is Daniel Garb of the Movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Spadina Gardens is a legendary apartment building in the annex of downtown Toronto. Stratford actors, opera singers, and robber barons alike have lived there. Publishing houses were spawned there, and writers like Salman Rushdie and Patricia Highsmith passed through its doors. But when a Dutch real estate conglomerate bought it, and words like renoviction started floating down its hallowed halls, the tenants decided to fight back. But can even an apartment as legendary as this one stop the rampant explosion of Toronto's housing crisis? Charlotte's Castle is a new documentary that looks at one Toronto apartment building, its history, aesthetics, and architecture, and the plight of its tenants, the people who live there. It's the work of award-winning Toronto documentarian Jamie Kastner, a friend of this show. I previously talked with Jamie about the secret disco revolution in 2012, the Skyjacker's Tale in 2016, and There Are No Fakes in 2019. Charlotte's Castle is having its world premiere tomorrow at Toronto's Hot Dog Cinema, and I'm very pleased to have Jamie Kastner back again via Zoom to tell us more about Charlotte's Castle. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, Daniel. Delighted to be here. Thank you for the lovely intro.
And great to see you again.
You too.
So let's start by describing, this is radio, but could you describe Spadina Gardens? What's so special about this place, about this building?
Well, Spadina Gardens is, first of all, the oldest kind of continuous rental apartment building in the city. It goes back to 1904. And part of what's unique about it is that it has maintained its original footprint. I mean, that is in both as a building, of course, but in the individual units, which are remarkably large by today's standards. They're roughly 2,800 square feet on a single floor. And it's just kind of a beautifully designed building, understated, but these apartments are really magnificent. And as you were suggesting, they have over the many years attracted a kind of commensurately colorful cast of tenants. What? So
One of the ones I'd like to bring up for Toronto buffs is Sir Henry Pellat, who's known as this very rich man who built Casa Loma. How did he end up there?
Well, at a certain point, he was a very rich man. At one point, I believe he was an electricity baron of the city and had many exploits far and wide, and including, I believe, tried and perhaps succeeded to mount a private army at one point in World War I, as one did back then, just to pass the time. Anyway, at a certain point, I believe it was when they made hydroelectricity public, he lost his shirt, and even though he was building Casa Loma as his personal castle, I believe he never got to live there, and instead wound up living in relative hardened straits at Spadina Gardens, I guess, relative to Casa Loma, but still pretty swank by today's standards. And rumor has it that he occupied two adjoining units, the second being occupied, depending on who you believe, either by his chauffeur, his wife, or his collection of armor that he brought from the castle with him. Or perhaps a combination of all three. I don't know.
Suits of armor.
Yes.
Spadina Gardens is this, maybe I shouldn't say this, it sounds like a restaurant at Spadina and Dundas, but it's not. But it is a posh apartment building where the tenants pay hefty rents by Toronto standards, yet even they are facing rent eviction when an international company took it over. Can you, first of all, can you explain to Torontonians who have yet to experience it, what is rent eviction?
Well, rent eviction is basically when a new landlord comes in and buys a property. And one of the legal ways to evict tenants is by saying you're going to do a major renovation on the place. And since rents have you know been skyrocketing in recent years, it benefits landlords to get out current tenants who are occupying the space at you know the lower rents of the time when they first moved in. And do so under the guise of rent eviction, and then, or with the excuse of renovation, and it's a way of cleaning house of the cheap, low-paying tenants, and bringing in a new cast of much higher-paying tenants. And in this building, and part of what attracted me to this story is that it's unusual from a number of points of view. It is an offbeat housing crisis story. But these are not your. I mean, actually, there's a range of units even within this building. I should say that there are basement units in there, which are not nearly so grand, although not too shabby either. But as one of the characters in the film, a former superintendent of the building said, they used to call themselves. They said they were joking. They were living in the dungeon beneath the castle. So there is a range even within that building, but. Yes, tenants there, I mean, at the time of filming, were paying in the neighborhood of $4,000 a month rent for 2,800 square feet. And, you know, $4,000 is $4,000. But to my understanding, as things evolved, the plan of the new landlord was to completely redo the units. And their initial attempt was to triple those rents. So that is fairly eye-popping numbers, and yeah.
My eyes are popping as you speak, yes.
So I mean, even though these are you know, relatively well-heeled, upper-middle-class people for the most part who've occupied this building, I think it tells another shocking, a kind of not as often heard, shocking housing story, in that if even people in this snack bracket are being pinched, and these are often older people who have been there for a long time, who decided, as it was once perfectly reasonable to do, to be lifelong renters, and suddenly they are feeling a very painful squeeze. And if they're suffering, then what does that imply for everybody even further down the food chain?
One of the tenants in your documentary described the hand-operated elevator like something straight out of a Wes Anderson movie, and I'd say that applies to many of the quirky tenants as well. So tell us about some of them.
Well, the oldest standing or sitting, I'm not sure what the correct tenant term is, but the tenant who's currently been there the longest is Charlotte V, the titular tenant. She's been there 25 years. And she is kind of a legend in the art house film world for a number of reasons. She is a delightfully colorful person, and she is a legendary fashion sense and has been written up in Toronto Life for her eclectic taste. She's also helped launch the careers of people like Adam O'Goyen and Whit Stillman and
Todd Solondz.
Yeah, Todd Solondz, exactly. Thank you. You know, so she is a real legend, and justifiably so in that rarefied space. There's a woman named Bobby Speck, who has been there a long time, who is a longtime annex dweller. She and her late husband ran a school in the annex for many years. And she was also one of the original activists who opposed the construction of the Spadina Expressway way back. You know, the other tenants include, or past tenants include Louise Dennis, who was the long reigning head of Random House Canada, also Graham Greene's niece for Literary Buffs.
I didn't know that. Yeah. And also Knopf. And Lester and Orpin Dennis as well, I think, right?
Exactly. Yes. She has helmed so many publishing houses, it's hard to keep track, but a real legend in her own right. And yes, attracted a real who's who of contemporary literature and showbiz through that place. It was written up at one time in I think the early 90s in a Toronto Life piece, where it was called the most New York building in Toronto, which, you know, of course, is both accurate and an ironic comment on our perennially colonial sense of self.
Among others, I think many Torontonians will remember George F. Walker, the playwright.
Yes. Great playwright.
And Maureen Forrester, the opera diva, the opera star. Canada's...
Yes, Maureen. Sorry, go ahead.
No. I'm just saying she and her son and daughter, who also became known as famous actors.
Her five children, I believe, in all, moved there after her divorce from the conductor, Eugene Cash. And so Maureen and the Cash kids lived there, and they are in the film. It was a really delightful interview. They're so cute and funny. I mean, Linda Cash is known for the Chris appeared. She's appeared in those Christopher Guest movies,
Second City,
of course. She's the famous Philadelphia cream cheese angel. Her brother Daniel has an acting career as long as your arm, from starting off in the movies in Alien.
Yes,
you know, right on through all sorts of stuff. So they were, it was wonderful. It was part of what was so fun about this, and part of what I think is significant about it as a story, is that you're talking about the kind of cultural landmark that attracted a certain cultural type of person who makes cities interesting, makes cities like Toronto interesting. Ironically, from a real estate point of view, I'm sure the argument can make that this very class of sort of colorful person drives up real estate values and also attracts developers. But the ironic part of that cycle is that then those very people who drove up the value of the city, both culturally and in real estate terms, then get squeezed out. And you've kind of seen this happen in city after great city after great city around the world, New York, London. And it's definitely happening here, because who on earth, you know, can afford to do anything other than you know, offshore banking and afford $12,000 a month rent?
Finally, because the movie's having its world premiere tomorrow at the Bloor Cinema, this is actually very close to the focus of the documentary. I wonder if any of the tenants plan to attend this screening tomorrow.
Well, there will, I believe many of them will be coming. We're actually going to be doing a Q&A after the show, where I will have the honor of being interviewed by Adam Egoyan, no less, who's going to moderate the Q&A. Charlotte Mickey will be participating with me, and perhaps Bobby Speck as well. And many of the other tenants, current and former, have RSVP'd. And it is kind of a fun meta experience to be having the show, you know, a stone's throw from the subject of the documentary.
It's a great movie, and I hope more people show up, partly for the aesthetics and humor, but also for the important issue it brings to the fore. Thanks so much for talking with me, Jamie.
Thank you, Daniel. Thanks a lot.
Jamie Kastner's documentary, Charlotte's Castle, is having its world premiere tomorrow at the Hot Dog Cinema. This is Daniel Garb of the Movies each Saturday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.